All right, making it official. Our conversation was already off and running. I just figured I'd hit record before we had to redo everything. Writer Stuff, we are back again, everybody. Thank you for joining us like you do every week. I know this. Well, actually, for real, I don't know this because I never look at our stats. So I have no idea if you're there or not. I could just be talking into space. But I'm doing it with Jeff Circle, as always. How are you doing, sir?
What's up, brother?
And tonight joining us for the third time is Eric Bishop, author of newest book, Babylon Will Rise.
Yes, sir.
I almost said Babylon Rising, but
Close enough.
Body Man, Babylon, thriller writer extraordinaire. But before we started, we were talking the business side of this, which is the absolute freaking worst. and you were saying you're in plain writing mode right now. I just started my third read through on my manuscript now. After my first read through, I realized I needed an entire other plot line, and then I needed to wrap up so many holes that the whole manuscript looked like Swiss cheese, even on the computer screen. 12,000 word rewrite, and now I'm going in for my third review. It's awful, man. We're on opposite sides of the spectrum, I think, right?
I guess we are, because I'm not there ready to start tearing it apart yet, and I'm trying to be really careful and real tight with this one, because I don't want to have give myself a month to do my edits, because I want to get to the editor by early April, if not mid April. So I'm trying to be very conscientious as I sit down every night. I'm planning out. I'm a pantser, but I am planning 2-3 chapters out in advance. Like, okay, this character's, and I'll even go into the document and I'll just put a chapter XX and I'll put, okay, take Nick and do this. And don't know what I'm going to have Nick do, but by the time I get to that night, I'll figure something out for Nick to do that's important for the plot. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Blades, guns, explosives, car chase. I don't know. Pick one.
This one's kind of interesting. The one I'm working on now, it's going to be the third book. It was going to be a standalone for my female assassin from Body Man and Breach of Trust, Mercy Deata. I had a backstory for her. I started writing it a couple years ago, and I thought I'm going to give her own book. And as I was writing it, I kept wanting to interject because I was going to bring the Body Man in to kind of do a favor since she helped him out in a few books. And instead I wanted to like tell part of his story, and I'm like, well, just shoot. I got a series. Why don't I just make her part of this series? And so I'm putting that in as book 3 in the series. And it's a blast, but at the same time, it's like, okay, I got to jump around. And I'm also connecting this to the fourth book. So the way Breach of Trust ends, the next book after that, I already planned out, title, everything worked out, and I'm going to put this one in. So this one's going to be happening while the fourth book is happening, and they're going to kind of intersect. So.
No. Are you writing both stories at the same time? Are you trying to write both stories at the same time?
Here I am, but I'm writing just this one, but I'm going to have to circle back to it. Part of that, it's happening at the same time frame, book 3 and book 4. But this, like, talk about the business side. This is the juice. Like, I don't ever sit down at night and go, oh, man, I got to write a chapter or two. I'm excited. Versus, like, tonight I have to work on a newsletter thing at some point besides writing. And I'm like, oh, man, do I really got to try to pimp my stuff? I'm like, I want to just write.
Yeah, I've never woken up being like, shit, I have to sit down and write today. But every time, like, I've got the newsletter, like, and I've got the mailing list. And I'm just like, oh, I'm like, I hate it when I get emails from people, but like, according to the business, that's the way to market. But I'm like who I'm on a couple of guys different. I'm not going to call anybody out, but honestly, I don't care. Like, I know, like I follow you guys on social media. I know Amazon. I'm on Amazon all the time looking for my next book. And I'm like, dude, I love your stuff, but I'm not going to open it. But I'm absolutely 100% wrong, because that's how everybody swears by their email marketing list. And I, like you just said, I hate it.
Wait, you get emails? What?
So popular. I'll go against that a little bit, though, because I was for the longest time. I've just started. I don't know if it's just a law of diminishing returns, because I don't send a lot. It's not like I send, you know, three newsletters a month or even every month. But I've definitely seen over the course of the last, since I've published in 2021, I've increased my newsletter, the people that are getting it, that number has increased pretty dramatically. But the connection I get, the emails I get back, the sales that I can directly tie to that have decreased. So I think, like you said, I get a lot of newsletters from a lot of authors, and I won't name drop, but there's a lot of them that I don't open. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And same as you, I know their book came out because I promoted them. You know, I put a post for them on social media. I don't go read the newsletter to say whatever it's saying. I don't know what it's saying. So
who do you use for your email service, Eric?
I had MailChimp before, and then MailChimp, like about a year and a half, two years ago, started charging. And I said, I'm not paying $20 a month to send out, you know, I think I got like 700 on my newsletter email list or whatever. So decent size, but not much compared to the big boys or girls. So I moved over to MailerLite. MailerLite had a free option. And if you have more than, I think for MailerLite, if you have more than 1,000 or 2,000 subscribers, you do have to pay as well. But they have a free version.
Will they show you the percentage of opens?
Everything, clicks per link. Yeah, it gives all the details. So I really, that's the thing that's changed, especially since I started bringing stuff in-house with publishing when the publisher went out of business, is I have to get really good at the business side. Because if I'm spending money, you know, I have a toilet in the other room. Certain stuff I flush down there, not money. Not one of the things I want to flush down there. I don't want to waste money, so.
Yeah, I've noticed over the last year and a half, and I think it's, we've talked about this before, but like my last book, I enjoyed my publisher. Like I really liked the product they put out for Blood Red Ivory. Marketing side was not there, but they never are. Even if you're with a big five, they're not going to do jack shit for you marketing wise. So that's what I just had to start learning, is all of this stuff. And I've, like you said, just throwing money down the toilet. I like to be optimistic and think that I'm throwing money into my education, but it's like, I see it go out and it doesn't come back in. And I'm just like, but what did I learn here? Like, what did I learn? Right. So am I refining an Amazon algorithm? Am I figuring out Facebook ads? What am I doing? And I have no idea. Yeah. Like, I'm just like,
Dude, I don't even know how many people listen to the Writer Stuff podcast.
I mean, I could look it up, but it's the same as like looking at reviews and looking at my stats on Amazon. I'm like, someday I should probably look at this like a business, but once I start feeling it, I will. Right.
I don't know. I have to keep track of it, or I choose to keep track of it, because I do daily Facebook ads, and I've played with them a lot over the last year and a half, I guess. So I'm spending money every day, and some days it's more than I'll tweak it sometimes. If I see that, hey, it's hitting here, I'll throw in a lot more. But what I found, there's always a diminishing return. Like, there was a certain number I was doing for a while, and I said, let me double it. I'll double it for a few days and see if I see sales double it, and see if there's a correlation. And at a certain number, no, I saw it like not, I wasn't losing money on the ads for sure. I was doubling my money. But to get it to triple or quadruple the money, there was this diminishing return number there that I would never. So then I brought it back down and I said, okay, I'm happy spending X amount to see X sales or X. And where I got a lot of it too, that really helped pick up is, and I give credit to David Darling. I'm glad to give credit to fellow authors that are super helpful with what they've learned, is Kindle Unlimited. I was against doing Kindle Unlimited because I was just like, why do I want to have someone read a book and I make like $1.40 off it when they could buy an ebook and I can make $4 off it? Math. Well, what I learned, what David had taught me too, is completely different market. People that have Kindle Unlimited, for the most part, aren't also out buying lots of ebooks. Why? Because they're paying $15.99 a month for Kindle Unlimited, versus people that are buying ebooks a lot of times aren't also going on Kindle Unlimited. So I jumped over Kindle Unlimited with The Body Man back about a year ago now, mid-January when I re-released it. It took a year, almost a full calendar year, but I got 1 million page reads on that one book, which the number sounds crazy. And it is. I'm very grateful for it. So I'm about to be negative, but it's not negative. But 1 million page reads equates to about, I think, like 2,800 book reads, which again, for many people, that's a lot of book reads. For a lot of the big authors we've talked to and had on our podcast and talk, you know, that's like, that's a good week, you know. It's Tuesday. Like, well, that's a career for some people that are self-publishing, you know. So
yeah, and you when your publisher folded, like, you went hard into it, started up Bruno Media, organized. And we're talking a little bit, you know, the business side. So, and you said you got yourself on a deadline, like there's nobody else, like you're the one keeping yourself on a deadline. What's your strategy, and like, How in depth did you lay out your plan of, okay, I am an independent publisher. I run Bruno Media. This is how I'm going to do it. And these are the steps I'm going to take to success. Like, how deep do you go? Or was it just like, let's fire this thing up and roll?
No, I spent a lot of time putting, so take it back several years ago. So when I was at Thriller Fest, and it was probably 2018, 17 or 18, I got to know Andrews and Wilson. A bunch of other authors were super kind with their time with me, and I wasn't getting anywhere getting into the publishing industry. And I think it was Brian Andrews especially said, self-publish. I did. And look, then I eventually got an agent and got a contract, blah, blah, blah. We're writing with Brian and with the two of them. And I was just like, it sounds like a lot of work. And it wasn't that I was afraid to self-publish because I thought it was a lesson or cheapened way to be published. I just kind of figured it would be a lot of work. And so I started Bruno Media 2023. So a little over a year, about a year and a half ago, legally about a year and a half ago. So 2023, Eric would go back to talk to 2017 Eric and say, you're correct. It is a lot of work. So you're going to write less because you're going to have to learn the business. But the flip side of that is after going through the experience with like a small publisher and stuff, the control I can have over it, and not a control in a twisted way, but the fact that I bring on good people like to do cover and do edit, and the fact that I have the final say so and I don't have someone else directing things, that is pretty rewarding. And just even like from a business side of it, Bodyman sold really well under the publisher. Not well enough probably to get me a big publisher to want to buy the rights when it went out of business. That's why I went and did my own thing. But the amount of money I made for that small publisher, I made not quite double that last year for Bodyman, but not too far off doubling that money that I'd made over multiple years. And that was with not as many sales, all that stuff, because I wasn't giving away 85% of my revenue. Yeah. I wasn't keeping 15% of sales. I was keeping 100. Now I was putting money out as well. I was doing marketing, book covers, but I had a finished product because the book had been published. So I already had a done book, so I didn't have to go pay an editor, which that's normally your biggest expense. So I was able to dive in with that one especially and have, you know, my costs were minimal in comparison, and it profited within that month, I think. The first, you know, it was within the profit, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got 752 reviews on Amazon just for Bodyman, so it's pretty impressive.
Yes, very impressive, and very grateful for. And again, it's one of those things that you work for those things. So, you know, for years ago doing newsletter and doing social media, and I constantly tell my kids, you're going to get nothing for nothing in this life. So if you want to, you know, you can't put a book out there, not promote it, and expect that you're going to get hundreds or thousands of reviews. It's just, and never paid for anything, never done any of that. I get stuff like that probably I used to be every day, probably weekly now because I block them all. Hey, you want to buy reviews? It's like, oh, I don't even read reviews, but I don't want to buy them. I want organically someone to read my book and give me a 1-star or 5-star. And yeah, so I'm very proud of that. I just crossed 750. Actually, I think I crossed 750 the day or within a day or two of the year anniversary of me re-releasing the book under my my imprint, which was the same day I got the 1,000,000 page reads for the calendar year, which was pretty crazy. So it was a good celebratory, but I think as you both know too, you get to a point where you write something and you're excited for it, and then you're on to the next thing, and then I was like, okay, it's almost probably what a heroin addict is like. Where's your next fix? Right. Although my heroin,
chasing that dragon.
My heroin's in a book form because I don't do drugs, so, you know.
It is though. There is that getting so amped about a book release is like, yeah, it is. I mean, you're chasing the dragon, right? Just because you love putting that new baby out in the world, see what happens. But it's also, you got to control it. Like you were saying, trying to schedule your launch for your next one is like, you know, I depending on who you talk to, I've talked to a bunch of different PR and marketing people, and they'll be like, you know, 4 months pre-sale is on the low end, right? Getting all that outreach out there. And as an independent, you're just like, you know, there is no smart business person that's at the publisher being like, easy killer. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to do it the way professionals do it. But you're sitting there and literally your hands over the button being like, I could launch it today. so you got to keep yourself disciplined. It's like we're talking about with you enforcing your own, deadlines, it's like, oh, like I said, I'm on my third read through with the new sci-fi book. I don't have a title for it yet because I hate titles, but yeah, I'm
I
just
love titles. That's the first thing I have.
Oh, I can't. Oh, it's killing me. That'll be the last thing I have, is like coming up with a title is impossible for me. But I'm just like, I'm kind of in that zone now where I'm just like, do I do it by myself or do I try and go get a big publisher? And I would only like consider like Bain or Tor, one of the big sci-fi publishers, but you know, that's an investment in and of itself. Like, do I want to go chase an agent or do I want to wait for like 12 to 14 months for one of those guys to get back to me? And right. It's like, and then you go to like Query Tracker, or I was on the the manuscript wish list site. Okay. And I'm just like, I don't think I want to reach out to any of these people. Like, there's some wackadoos that call themselves literary agents, and I'm just like, oh, I can't imagine those conversations. I'm like, this is not fun making that list. I'm probably not doing myself any favors, but it's like killing me.
So I didn't answer your first one. So let me go that. I have a comment about the agent thing, but what I've learned in the last year and a half is, A, if I don't give myself deadlines, I'll slack off. So I've kind of looked at the market, and for me, pre-order 6 months out is great, but I also know that you can only move that date once with Amazon before they're really going to slap your hands or lock your account, basically. So I got to be comfortable that I'm going to be in a good spot when I hit that pre-order button. So that's why I normally try to give myself, I think 4 months is good for pre-order. And that's just me looking at the market, guesstimating for, you know, self-publishing or having your own imprint. They're not as important as I thought, though. Early on, I thought pre-orders were really important, but you know, if you're self-published, you're not getting a bestsellers list on anything. Now, you might get an Amazon top release or top seller in your category, and there's nothing, that's a great thing to get, but pre-orders really are a big deal for the big dogs who are trying to get on the sellers list. So everyone else, it makes you feel good. And like, I'll use Breach of Trust as an example. I had a lot of pre-orders for Breach of Trust, good enough that the day Breach of Trust came out, which I think was June 18th of last year, the day it came out, I was already profitable. So I already made everything back that I paid for. So everything after that was gravy. And that was super cool. Babylon Arise didn't have that happen. So I was like freaking out when Babylon Arise came out. I'm like, what's going on? Where's all my pre-orders? And then I just kind of had to have a come to Jesus moment. Like, dude, you're doing just fine. You had a great year. You're not paying to publish books. You're making profit to publish books. So just, you know, enjoy yourself. Enjoy the. And so I need those reminders every now and then to like, why are you doing this? Sure, I'd love to have the house in Fiji, and I'd love to have the chalet and, you know, in Switzerland. Yeah, I'm not stupid. But if I'm doing this for money, probably not going to be a very happy person. I'm doing this because when I get to hold my book and finish my book and then go write the next one, I'm super excited. So it's about the writing, but I have to do all the other stuff unless I want to, you know, fund this out of my paycheck from my day job, which I don't want to do. So,
yeah.
And then agent wise, the best thing that someone told me years ago when I was trying to get an agent, which I did from 2017 until 2020. So I was on like a 3-4 year mission for agents, maybe early 21 even, was agents' job to keep out the crazy people for publishers. That's why agents have jobs. And it's not a knock at agents either. It's like, that's kind of why the industry created this, you know, this layer between them and the average writer. And being an agent's hard. And I talked about it with someone, I think probably was on my podcast recently. It's like, you know, nowadays we live in it's hard to make a living in this country. So say you need to make $100,000 a year where you live to have a comfortable life, and you're an agent. How many authors do you need to have that are going to generate you off 15% commission, $100,000 income? Quite a lot of authors, and quite a lot of authors that are selling pretty good. Because if you look at the numbers of what traditional published sells, what self-published sells, you're going to need thousands of authors to make $100,000 if you got small published, you know, just small indie authors. So it's a business, and you have to treat it like a business. And that's the sucky part of this, because I wish it was just tell a good story and we'll highly reward you for your good story, but it's not how that works.
Yep. And it is just odd. Like it's same thing every time when I'm like, do I want to do this myself or do I want to go find somebody to do it for me? And it's like, I'll start and I'll get I'll just start reading and reading and reading, and I'll just be like, oh my God, these people are exhausting.
Yeah.
It's odd. I don't know. But then we talk to people like, you know, Liz, and she's awesome. And it's like, yeah, there's good people out there. I just don't know if the good ones are hitting it as hard advertising on the internet as the other ones. I think is what it comes down to.
It's just so hard to know. I see why people, and I've got a book in the works. It's not in the works. I've written about a third of it, and I put it away a couple of years ago, and I'm going to go back to it because I think it's going to be a big deal. And the person that I talked with it is a big deal, and they thought it was going to be. So it's one of those things. It's like, once I can get this around my head around this story, I think I can do something with it. And I don't want to just self-publish it. So I'll probably go back to the trenches of shaking the trees for agents I've talked to years ago and have relationships with and try traditional, because for that one, I want a big deal. But if I believe in it and I can't get agents, then I probably will self-publish it. But I want to try that route because, you know, everyone wants that, you know, that big pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And it happens for people. And that's where I always try to tell people when I'm talking to them, it's there. People get it. Just don't have that be your end goal. Be satisfied with completing a book and knowing that you did something, because that might be all you get out of this. But then on the flip side, if you say, well, I'm just going to go small publisher, there's nothing wrong with that. But I always ask people, hey, what are you going to get out of that deal? What is the publisher going to do for marketing? How much are they going to pay you? You know, what's going to be your cut of the deal? Because for a lot of people, giving those rights away to a small publisher, if you got a couple $1,000s to invest, you can probably do what they do and you can keep all the revenue. Yep. So it's not always, so it's a hard balance because everyone's different. Every publisher is different, and you just have to be comfortable with whatever your decision is and, you know, spend some time kind of mulling over your options.
Well, Eric, you've been chipping away at the ham for a while now, like you said, since, you know, before 17, and you've taken a lot of different approaches. You've got your newsletter. You started off doing some podcasting, and now you have your own podcast. Mm-hmm. You go on podcasts. You advertise. You're doing a lot of things. What are you going to do different this time? How are you going to approach with this super book that's in the back of your head that you got going? That's a big opportunity there. Mm-hmm. How are you going to approach it this time when you start to go out there and try to move this one along in a big way?
Yeah, when I get to that one, and that one, it might be another year because I've got multiple projects with other people this year that have sprouted up. So that other book might get put off for maybe two. It's not Russia versus Ukraine, so there's not a time factor there. The story I want to tell, whenever I tell it, it will be timely. I can make it fit into what's going on in the world. And for that one, what I'll do different from what I did in, you know, 17, 18, 19, that's what I've got to figure out. Because I would go the agent route. And most of the people I know in the last couple of years that have gone the agent route, it's not good. It's just being straight up. It's people either getting an agent or trying, you know, sending 100 query letters and not getting an agent. And even I know multiple real like writers that I've read their books. They're really good books. They got an agent and the agent goes and puts it out on, you know, submission for publishers. And a year later, they still don't have a deal on that book.
Crickets.
So yeah. That's the part that's where I'm going to write. I'm going to do the first thing, which I always tell this to people, my advice. The only thing in your control is write the best damn book possible. That's it. That's your job. Your job is to do that. Now, once that's done, then some more work is going to start. And maybe more work is really what it becomes, depending on which route you want to go. If you want to go the agent route, you don't have a lot of work necessarily, besides maybe going to conferences and meeting some of these agents face to face. That's always a smart way to do it. And I did that years ago, going to Thriller Fest like 3 years in a row. And I thought that was those connections would open up deals for me or, you know, a relationship. And it didn't. But I know other people that it did. So I don't believe in luck. But I believe if you are prepared for when the opportunities open up, that's when things happen. So, you know,
it's like having that pitch on standby, like just having that thing refined and ready to go like that. Yeah. And this last BoucherCon talking to Mark Cameron, you know, him, he was laying out, giving me a ton of good advice. I mean, just freely, we're just standing around talking. He's laying out some fantastic advice. So yeah, part I'm bitching about the online research about finding the agent, but it's when the book is ready and when I've got my, you know, strategy down, I'm going to have to go to Thriller Fest or maybe the science fiction conference, because it says sci-fi I'm doing this time, but yeah, and just go start pitching. Sure. But it's like, ah, oh, God.
Yeah. Well, you need to, and it's hard, but you have to do your research on the agent. Cause what the other thing you have to remember is if you find an agent, and this is something I've studied for years and I've asked a lot of authors questions, is if you find an agent that's got their whale, they got the person that brings in the money, it might be hard for you to get in the door, especially if they've got, and I'll name drop on this one, because I've talked to Brad Taylor's agent. I thought I had John in the bag years ago with one of my books. I thought, I'm going to get John Talbot. Well, John's got a military thriller guy. John's got several authors in different, you know, subgenres and stuff that's he's pitching to the publishers with their books. So it's hard to then get into an agency like that that already has some big names when you're not a proven number. That's very, very challenging, first of all. But on the flip side, if you go start with a new agent who doesn't have any experience, well, they probably don't have any great contacts at Simon & Schuster. Exactly. Or Atria. Yeah. So you almost have to find that middle ground. You want to find someone hungry. You want to find someone that, A, believes in your story unconditionally, but they want to make money. And the only way they make money is if you make money. So if they can get a lot of sales, they're going to get 15% of your money. So you got to find that hungry person. But how to do that is, that's like the code to crack, you know? How does that?
Yeah, that's the algorithm. That is the algorithm.
That is the algorithm. That's
Jeff mentioned the podcast. How was the podcast live? I was on a couple months ago. It's a good time, but
when did we air that?
November? Did we do that? November, December? It was November.
I think it aired November. I think we filmed it early. We filmed it after the storm, right? Because I not have internet.
We had to reschedule because you lost internet, something like that. Internet. Yeah.
Yeah, podcast doing great. I just took a month off. I took kind of like, I had filmed up until me going to Europe. And then after Europe, I was like, I'm going to take a break. And then Jason Piclow came out with the book and we were talking and I'm like, you know, we might as well cross promotional this thing. Let's do a cross promotion for your book and for Pivot and for Babylon Arise. So we filmed another episode in December with Jason for Protectors and A Tale of Two Scribes, a combo episode. And then I didn't film anything for about a month. So I've just now, I think I've got four in the can. First one aired last night that we've started. I don't really do seasons, but yeah, I'm filling up for the next couple months. And the fun part about the podcast is it's just getting to bring on authors I want to talk to and talk about the craft. And, you know, and sometimes it's renew a relationship that I haven't talked to someone in a while. Like, hey, come on the podcast. Let's talk about what you're doing. Cause I haven't been to a conference in like 5 years and I'm going to try to go to one or two this year, but went through a divorce four or five years ago, whatever that was now. And that kind of killed conferences. Cause then it was custody. And yeah. I swear either conferences happen on my custody weekends or the first week of the month, which is I do accounting and finance. So it's like, you don't get, I ask for a time off like the first week of the month. My boss is like, do you want to get fired? It's like, well, no, I kind of need this job. And, you know, do you want me to fire you? So I think conferences the last 5 years have pretty much fallen into one of those two. And I think Thriller Fest this year is outside of both of those. And my kids are also getting older. So if I lose a night, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I wasn't willing to lose a night to go to a conference. Conferences are great. Yeah. The kids mean much more than any of the stuff that's behind me or in this house or conferences or anything. Now I'm not cool anymore. Like my son be 18, literally at the end of this week. I can say this because he won't see this show. So he's going to Nashville Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. He's going up to Nashville. We're filming this on a Tuesday night. So two nights. He's going up for a bluegrass thing. And his mom's taking him, his sister's going. And he had said a while ago, we come up. And I'm like, no, when it's like me going to a writer's conference. When you're there, it's about that, not about someone.
Yeah, it's work. It's business.
It's business. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, I don't want to not see my kid for his 18th birthday. So I messaged my boss, got a rental car, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to drive. And I got military friends that one's active duty, one's retired. They're up in they're up in Campbell, so about an hour north of Nashville. So I'll head up there Friday, surprise him, maybe get a couple minutes with him, and so you know he'll be shocked, I think, and then maybe I'll have dinner with some friends in Nashville and I'll go stay with them for a few days. So, yeah, it'll be fun. Hopefully he's not mad on there.
Yeah. It's, you got to get that spreads and we got to get that time in. Like, I had, my guys come up, at BotcherCon. I had them come in that Thursday. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. Pubs, you little monsters go run around this place. And they did. They had a good time. So, but I'm like, sorry, dad's working. I'm on my panels and I'm meeting new people and this is a work week, but they're very cool about it. But I don't want to miss anything because I'll be there at some point where they're off doing their own thing.
I hate to say it's like that. It's like the cliche, but it's like the fact that he's 18 this week, like that doesn't compute in my head. My daughter's 13. So I'm like, at least I got 5 more years. But then my brain goes, yeah, dummy, how fast did 5 years go by with him? And I'm like, darn it. Don't say that. You know, I don't want 5 more years to go by. I'll be like 50 something by then. It's like, geez,
not ready.
No, not ready at all.
But you, of all people, would appreciate this, being a music guy. My 7-year-old, only thing he wanted for Christmas was a drum set. So I've got a 7-year-old in there just wailing away on a drum set, like random times. It's awesome.
Noise canceling headphones.
Oh yeah, he can grind too. He'll slam on those things.
I got a set in the other room. I just banged on them about 10 minutes before I came on here for a couple of minutes just to be like, man, I need to hit these things more. So, you know, Shinedown's going on tour this year. So if I go to a couple shows, you know, I might need to steal Barry's drum kit at some point and show him I've learned something. There's some good shows coming up. I'm taking my son about 2 weeks. We're going to see, he's a big bluegrass fan. We're going to see Billy Strings. Billy's coming. And then May is going to be the big one. We'll see if he comes with me. He says he is, but I got Metallica tickets in Charlotte and AC/DC in Nashville. So that'll be a fun stretch for concerts. We'll see. Or I'm calling a friend at the last minute saying, hey, my kid won't go. You want to go to Nashville and see AC/DC?
Yeah. My 7-year-old wants to go see Metallica this year. And I'm just like, you're 7. Like let's settle down a little bit. But at the same time, my 12-year-old is into he goes back and forth between Theory of a Dead Man and Shinedown. And I don't know how those two became two sides of the same coin. But like when we're like they have impeccable taste in music. Most of it's like 90s and up derived. But yeah, it'll either be Theory of a Dead Man song or a Shinedown song lately. And I'm just like, yeah, dude, you guys have amazing taste. It's gotta come from me. But as the very middle of the road parent that I am, like Rockville and Daytona, there's like one of the nights has like Theory of a Dead Man, Linkin Park, Blink, Incubus, all in the same lineup and the same stage. And like me and the wife are like, do you think the 12 and the 7-year-old could handle Rockville and Daytona Beach, Florida? Like,
might be a little wild. They have weather normally down there.
That could be an experience they're not ready for.
Yeah. Like, Shinedown is doing Rockville, so they'll be there one of the nights.
Yeah, Shinedown's on there. Yeah, and Theory is on there too.
I think Motley Crue might be doing it as well. Def Leppard, there's a bunch on that. Shinedown just announced today their spring into summer tour. So, I got to see where I want to go. So, local ones are easy enough. I just drive to them, not far away. But do I want to fly? And because I didn't see any shows last year, they were on basically. Pay the bills tour, just go to do some shows to kind of pay for, you know, because they have admin and stuff that they have, you know, year round. So they did some shows basically just to, it was kind of like supposed to be their off year to work on a new album. And I will say the new album, two songs dropped this week. So for your son, 365 and Dance Kid Dance, I think is the other one. Really good. So my son and I were in the studio at Eric's studio back in November, and he was like, hey, you want to hear some of the new songs? And we're like, pinch us.
Yeah.
So he played like half the album for us and we're just like, so cool to be in the studio. Eric's playing.
That's awesome.
Mixing them right there. And you're just like, I don't know how this experience happened in life, but I like it. The downside, and I think I've told you this as well, is you get the experience with them, which is like an all access, do whatever. I've done travel and gone to shows. And then, you know, AC/DC is coming in relatively in a town 5 hours away, but, yeah, I'm getting third level tickets. You know, I'm getting the working man tickets. It's like, I don't have backstage passes for AC/DC. Sorry.
I can imagine that their backstage at this point has to look like prune juice and glucosamine chondroitin and
oxygen machines.
Oxygen machines. Yeah. I don't know. Hey, they got it though. That sound still lives on. So
they still, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man. So we've been talking business this whole time. Babylon will rise. And what are you doing next? You said the book to break all books isn't coming out for a couple of years, but you got collaborations going this year, huh?
Yeah. So next one up, Supreme Justice. So that's the third one in the Body Man series. It's kind of on an interesting trajectory because, and I started a couple of years ago, and the idea was pretty poignant at the time and still is, because it has to do with the Supreme Court. And I mean, the Supreme Court's got a lot of cases. And
some stuff coming out.
After yesterday, when we're giving out blanket pardons to people, Supreme Court might be getting some work with that was actually funny. Well, not funny, but when I heard that happening, I'm not a scholar, I have no law degree, but I studied that very thing for when I did the Body Man, because I wanted to have a presidential pardon as part of the storyline of kind of that role.
Preemptive.
Is it legal? And, I reached out to some people since yesterday and like, hey, people in the know, what do you think? And so far they're like, yeah, I think it's going to hold up. And I'm like, how though? And how do I get one? I was like, this is wild.
Yep. That's such that was just so insulting just to see the names on that list. And as a Fed, I'll tell you, there were some very interesting conversations today. Oh, so sure. there's a whole lot of change coming to the government, which I don't think is bad at all. I know there's some brethren who would who are panicking, absolutely right. Fit for a white jacket at this point, but I love every second of it. If I could, I'd be working for Doge right now, and I'd be carrying Jack Carr's hatchets, one in each hand.
The Vex backing out, so Elon might be looking for a partner in crime, man.
I'll reach out to him tonight. Yeah, yeah, I'll reach out to Elon.
The thing I'll say about it too, real quick, and we don't want to go down that politics road of all that, is that one of the scary things for me is the precedent it sets. I mean, why in 4 years, why would Trump not give his whole family blanket pardons? Because who knows who get, especially if a Democrat ends up, you know, winning the office in 2028. Just it's like that slippery slope that people start to do and go, well, that's not a big deal. And it's like, yeah, but
it's a very big deal.
That is a massive deal. Yeah. And it'll fall like anything else. I was telling someone today, I had to Google this weekend, is there still fires in LA? Because like starting like by Thursday or Friday last week, I heard nothing on social media. I don't watch the news. So my news is coming from my phone websites, but legitimate sites, you know, MSN, Fox News, CNN. I look at all the different ones just to get some kind of a blend of reality. Nothing about LA fires. And I'm like, they're still going on. Oh yeah, they're still like only 50% contained or whatever. And I'm like, holy cow. But so the pardons will not be a story in another 24 hours. And people are just, someone just gave away get out of jail free cards. And we're not going to talk about it.
And nobody will do an autopsy of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Nobody will do an autopsy of, you know, the last 8 months and all the
Trump getting shot in the ear. I mean,
stuff. Yeah. No background, no AARs, no nothing. Just a bunch of suits saying they were right and we were wrong. And, you know, all the people who actually work for a living being like, this is not right. So, I mean, it's good stuff for us because it'll give us stuff to write about for decades, but it's not good for the country.
I think we have a card now where we can make up anything we want. And if someone says that's not realistic, you just go, hold on. I screenshot this article from 6 months ago. Yep. It is realistic.
That's, you know what? And that's, I don't know if I consciously thought about it, but man, like that's probably why I'm in sci-fi writing right now, because as I was writing Overmatch, I'm writing Overmatch and I'm just like, as I'm writing, I'm like, this is probably 10 years too late. Like I'm thinking I'm writing pretty cutting edge stuff. And I'm just like, even if I am ahead of the game right now, in 5 minutes, I'm not going to be.
Yeah.
I was just like, so as I'm going, I'm just like, I just started working notes in this sci-fi idea. And I'm like, shit, I can make up whatever I want. And I'm right. I'm like, done. Like, let's try it.
Yes. I have some friends that write in sci-fi and yeah, you kind of, you open up your world a little bit, but you will find those people that say, hey, blasters don't really operate that way in space or this and that. And then you're just like, it's fiction. That's right.
I love those conversations.
There is no Jean-Luc Picard. There is That's no right. Kirk, you know. I don't even know if this is real. Musk might be, or Rogan might be right, and this is a simulation, or Musk.
Yeah, it's a simulation. None of it matters. No. Yep. But, but hey, man, we're, I told you I'd keep this to commute time, and we're just about there. But, you know, I had like a ton of stuff on my notes we didn't get to, of course. But,
John always has his notes. It's amazing.
I got my notes. I'm a very organized person when it comes to other stuff than my writing. but yeah, before
I
we go,
I have my thing over here. When I do my podcast, I have full sheets written out for, I do. I spend an hour prepping for any podcast, and I rarely even look to the right of my sheets. I just start talking like, oh yeah, I never talked about that. So,
yep. Yeah. I got my Sharpie and my open pens. But, before we go, your socials and your website and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, at EPB author gets you to Twitter, X, Instagram. I think Facebook is under Eric P. Bishop author. Website is ericpbishop.com. I think I uploaded it earlier. I actually finally got, and this is a paperback, hardcovers behind me. I got hardcovers for Babylon Arise just came in. So people can go to my website. I think they're $25.99 on Amazon, and I'm selling for just $20. And I didn't buy it. I don't have a ton, but the cool thing about that is, once you get the author copies like that, you cut out Amazon taking like 60% of the profits. And so I can just cut the price down by what Amazon was going to take anyways. And it won't sell a ton, but for that one, for Babylon Will Rise and for any of the books that sell off my website, I'm printing off a random chapter from Supreme Justice. Not edited. It's, I'm sure, messy. I probably got the words spelt wrong, and people realize I need an editor because I don't know grammar very well. But I print it off, and I'll sign it and make a little stupid note on it, and I'll include that with everything. But
draft one always sucks.
Yeah, that's bold, man. That's bold.
Well, I try to be authentic.
Bold
with
move,
it.
Cotton.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Try to be. Hey, authentic.
I appreciate the shout out too. In Babylon Will Rise, I was lucky enough to be an ARC reader, but no, I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. I appreciate all your support and stuff. It's a great, like I've said before, it's a great community. It'd be good if we could all be rich doing this, but I think we are because we're getting to tell our stories. So that, you know, that really, and I'm not just saying, that's the reward. Hopefully money comes with it too. Maybe, you know, maybe you'll get a fancy house and Amazon Prime deal or Netflix deal and all that, but enjoy writing. If you enjoy writing, then that should be the juice.
That's right. Yeah, there's the grind, but we get to make stuff up and then have other people tell us what they think of it, which is not something everybody does. So
that's very true.
That's a cool thing. Yeah. And that was so eloquently put too when I said that. That's amazing.
That's why
this is recorded.
Yeah.
That's right. Hopefully I remember to press record. Yes.
You won't look at the numbers and see how many people listen to it, but
you know what? I will. We talk about that at least like once a month. I'll look at it and I'll just be like, hey Jeff, I got good news, I got bad news.
You won't look at it.
Profit sharing is not there yet, but people are watching it.
Yeah, keep watching.
Keep watching, yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, fellas. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, Eric.
Appreciate it.
Have fun, man.
Good night, everybody.
See you, everybody.